Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Comments Podcast. This is Travel Comments Podcast number 24, recorded Wednesday, November 30th, 2005. Today's topics: what do you miss when you travel? Staying connected while on the road, and fun with rental cars. This week, coming to you from the bathroom of the Civic Center Marriott in downtown Durham, North Carolina. I managed to pick up an Anchor Steam beer at the bar before coming up to the room this evening. Sorry I didn't get a podcast out over the weekend, but I'll tell you, it was a big eating weekend, and I just couldn't rouse myself from my food coma. While I managed to survive Thanksgiving without doing a sort of Monty Python Mr. Creosote routine, I still had to spend a good bit of couch time to provide for adequate digestion. I'm on the back stretch of kind of a tough triangulation through the South this week. Monday, Tampa; Tuesday, Wednesday, Memphis; now this evening and tomorrow, Raleigh, Durham; and then back to Chicago tomorrow, Thursday night. And that ends up putting me on United, Delta, AirTran, Northwest, and American Airlines. I mean, how many more bankrupt airlines can I fit on a single ticket? And if one of them goes down, does that blow up my entire ticket? I don't know. Well, anyhow, I avoided the cold weather. There's been a front blowing through, I know, the Midwest, but instead I got a bunch of rain. And my Tampa to Memphis leg was routed through Atlanta Monday night, which, because of the driving rain, turned into me getting into Memphis Tuesday morning at about 2 a.m. Hartsfield was closed for a time, and every flight was delayed. It was a complete mess. And you think that stuff only happens to O'Hare. So there's a nice little audio clip from my time in Atlanta Hartsfield a couple nights ago Monday night, waiting for my AirTran flight to Memphis. Apparently maintenance work on the fire alarm set off the warning siren. This went on for 45 minutes. So following up on a couple of things, hey, it's the last day of the month tonight, so the cluster map site, which plots the location of Travel Commons web visitors on a world map based on their IP addresses, resets to zero tomorrow, Thursday. And actually, since most of you won't hear this until after it's reset, I actually did a screenshot of it this evening, so you can see after the full month of November where all the dots are, and I'll post that picture in the show notes. It actually only maps visitors, I think, to the website, but not subscribers to the RSS feeds or the iTunes feed. So I don't know. I think it's really interesting. You end up seeing that the vast majority of Travel Commons subscribers are from the U.S. and the EU. I really love watching the spots pop up elsewhere. I just picked up one in Manila and what looks like Brasilia. My Latin American geography isn't as strong as it should be. Anyhow, check it out through the month of December when you get a chance. You just click on the map icon on the left-hand menu. Also, thanks to all who've taken the time to go through the PodTrack listener survey. PodTrack is one of the companies popping up trying to provide advertising for podcasts, and I thought this would be an easy way to get an idea of the kind of folks who are listening to the podcast. A number of you have completed the survey. Thank you very much. However, Amy left a note on the Travel Commons website saying that she had tried to take the survey, but the link took her not to the survey, but to a podcast panel sign-up form that actually shows up at the end of the survey, but without any way to get back or find the survey. So I've been trading a couple of notes with podcast folks or PodTrack folks, and they say it has something to do with browser cookies. They set to keep people from responding multiple times. Anyhow, they're working on the fix, and so again, appreciate anybody who's trying. And David Glickman of Wellen, I can never figure out which consonants you drop in British town names. Anyhow, Wellen in the UK, I'll take that a shot, left a comment on podcast number 23 regarding the friendliness of self-service. As you've probably noticed, airlines are trying to move more customer interactions toward automated service in order to save money. Now, different people have different reactions, or different expectations for their interactions with a company, especially when that interaction is as important as and as expensive as a travel ticket or an airline ticket. We've had some good exchanges of opinion from both sides of the ticket counter over the past couple of podcasts. David says that that his wife booked on BA's new Heathrow to Bangalore route in business class, and he had checked her in online at home the day before just to make sure she had an aisle seat. The next day in Terminal 4, she used one of the self-service kiosks to print out her boarding pass. You know, boarding the plane, she was, as David says, pleasantly surprised to be shown to seat 1K in first class. And, you know, looking at the boarding pass, she noticed that the machine had indeed printed out a first-class boarding pass. David says, I remembered that some time ago BA had emailed us to let us know that there was an offer where one-way upgrades were being offered for a limited time subject to availability. I guess I'm impressed that BA would have thought this through and have been able to link this offer to all their delivery channels and deliver it in a seamless, unexpected way. She really enjoyed the pampering on the flight. You know, I've flown BA BA first class, and it is great from Chicago to Heathrow, and it is great service. I'm sure she absolutely did enjoy it. And that's a good comment, and an interesting comment about about the importance of the experience when you start linking all these channels together. David could be, David has got consulting in his future, I can see. Anyhow, as always, thanks to everyone who sent me notes at comments@travelcommons.com or left comments on the Travel Commons website, www.travelcommons.com.
On the road, life is hell. Strange bed in a lonely motel. But one thing needs my mind.
The first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast: what do you miss when you travel? Ian Davies dropped me a line to suggest a topic. What do you miss most when you travel, and how do you compensate? Now, it's an interesting question, especially coming from Ian. Ian travels quite a bit for his job supporting software for Formula One racing. You know, can I say I am just so jealous of Ian's job? I mean, mixing technology with fast cars and getting paid for it. You know, I mean, that is every guy's dream. Well, I started pushing his question around a bit. I mean, it was a good one. It really got me thinking. So, you know, first I set some ground rules. No missing the family. I mean, that's too easy. It's almost a cop-out. But nothing really sort of popped top of mind. So, you know, I thought, well, you know, it's Thanksgiving weekend. Maybe if I smoked a cigar, kind of thought about it, a little bit of wine. It didn't last long. I mean, the wine, not so much the wine, but it was just too cold to smoke a cigar outside in Chicago this weekend. So, a bit more slowly than I would have liked, it started to come around to me. It wasn't one big thing I missed, but instead it was sort of the small routine things that I missed the most. You know, a good strong cup of tea, walking downstairs in the morning, feeding the cat. Really, you know, it was just sort of my morning routine, that sort of small bit of time that I have to myself before the rest of the family stirs. It's tough to find that kind of time on the road. Even the most homey of bed and breakfasts isn't designed to provide for quiet space outside your room. And though I will tell you that when I finally got to the Memphis Marriott at 2 a.m. Monday night, Tuesday morning, after my delayed flight through Atlanta, I was completely alone. No front desk clerk, no bellman, no bartender. Right idea, wrong time. I mean, the only quiet I was looking for right then was behind closed eyelids. So my choice was either I was going to have to break the silence or sleep on the lobby couch. So it was one of those, hello, anybody here? And after 5 minutes, somebody finally popped out of the back room, so they were able to check me in. You know, there's a tendency to want to bring a little home to your hotel room. I mean, this works okay if you're in the same hotel room for a couple of days. I know some people who will put up family pictures on the bedstand and the like, but, you know, a lot of my hotel stays are one-night stands, purely from the business viewpoint, one-night stands. Anyhow, my stay here in Durham, North Carolina, this evening, you know, I caught the last flight in from Memphis to Raleigh-Durham Airport, and I'll check out first thing in the morning, head over to Duke University for a day in a conference room, and then catch the last flight out to O'Hare tomorrow night. I'm in this hotel room for 8 hours, not much time to make it like home. You're personalizing your space, though, with music takes only a couple of minutes. Earlier in my travel career, I would kind of miss my music. I'd carry a Walkman and a few mixtapes around, but you know, after a couple of weeks, those mixtapes would get kind of old, even when I was using 180-minute cassettes. Of course, the iPod has solved this whole music carrying problem, but after a while, you know, wandering around with headphones gets a bit old. I mean, it can be awkward to do anything in the bathroom while wearing earbuds. And actually, that's where my iTrip comes in handy. I bought it to use in the car. You know, you plug it into the top of the iPod, tune the radio to 87.9 FM, and it just pushes the iPod sound through the car stereo speakers. One day, though, it dawned on me as I was sort of wrestling with my earbuds while getting dressed. You know, every hotel has a clock radio, and I bet you those clock radios will tune into 87.9 FM. You know, sure, I could, you know, drag around one of the Bose or JBL speaker stands, but I'll tell you, this little iTrip's a hell of a lot smaller, and it's a lot less to schlep around. You know, but for those times when I'm actually staying in a single place for a couple of nights, I do try and expand my living space sort of beyond my assigned hotel room. I mentioned in earlier podcasts the tendency for folks to sort of hunker down in their room starts to become a bit of a cave. You know, concierge or club lounges are great places to expand out of the room. With my frequent sleeper status, most of my stays at Marriott and Starwood hotels, I end up getting upgraded to concierge floor. So I can get up early, pop into my workout clothes, and walk down to the lounge when it opens. You know, typically, there's no one there save for the attendant, and they're setting up for breakfast anyhow. So a good morning, and they're on their way. I kind of get a quiet sort of 15 minutes to sort of flip through the paper before the early breakfast crowd shows up, and then I'm off to my workout. It's not perfect, though. I can rarely get a good cup of tea, and I don't think that the health codes will allow them to supply cats for me to feed. But then again, I don't have to argue with a seventh grade boy about clothes and personal hygiene, so, I may break even after all. The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast, staying connected while on the road. You're pushing around thoughts for the first topic, trying to answer Ian Davies' question about what do you miss. It took me down a bunch of paths, and once I came up with an answer that met my self-imposed no family rule, I figured I could then relax it at least just a little bit and walk down that path for a while. I didn't want to completely chuck the no family rule. It was it's just too easy to say I miss my family. And unless you're a CEO with a corporate jet, there's no easy way to compensate for that. So the more I reflected on it, and I continued to think actually while I was on this trip, I realized that it was the small, routine little bits of conversation that I missed. The, hi, what's up? Nothing. Oh, okay, sort of type of conversations. The, could you swing by the gas station for milk and a lottery ticket phone call? You know, those sort of atomic pieces of conversation, when aggregated, are a big piece of that sort of seemingly effortless type of intimacy that, I think is at the core of any good relationship. Of course, this is toughest on sort of multi-week international travel. Spanning a half dozen or a dozen time zones if you're going over to India, that alone causes problems, let alone being apart for more than a week. It doesn't seem to take much to diverge, to get headed off on a different track, a different cadence from the family at home. The first thing that really gets sort of squeezed out are these little bits of conversation. And instead, all the day's conversation, all the interaction with your family gets loaded into a single end-of-day phone call, into what could be sort of the relationship version of what engineers like to call a single point of failure. If both sides of the conversation are in a good mood, relaxed, undistracted, and are in a talkative mood, everything goes great. However, that's a big string of ifs, and sometimes you're just going to roll snake eyes. Your plane was delayed, the cat threw up on the rug, your client just quit without approving your invoice, your daughter's best friend stiffed her at recess. You know, I mean, the number of things that can foul the mood at one end of the phone or the other is infinite. And if you're dealing with teenagers, double that. There's no real magic to pulling back from that single point of failure to going back to a more natural flow. You know, mobile phones are great for this. Travel actually is pretty inefficient from a time usage standpoint. There are all sorts of downtimes, waiting in the TSA line, waiting to board the plane, sitting on the plane waiting for everyone else to board, waiting out the inevitable flight delay, waiting for the rental car bus. You know, all these are times to whip out the mobile and instead of checking voicemail or instead of running the BlackBerry, call home. Grab that random bit of conversation with whomever picks up the phone. You know, at the end of the day, you've probably ended up with more conversation, but no single one was so vitally important that you couldn't just say, you know, I'll call you later if you got interrupted or your wife's in a not in a talking mood or the conversation just kind of turned weird. You're going to talk again in a couple hours anyhow. IM kind of serves the same purpose for those days when you're stationary for a while, be it at the office or at the Starbucks. You know, just a quick what's up with the kids. Of course, on those, you want to make sure you got your volume turned off. My wife sent me one of those winks on MSN Messenger, a big kiss. It went off in a conference room with about half a dozen people around me. That took a bit of explaining.
You got a fast car. I got a plan to get us out of here. Been working at the convenience store. Managed to save.
And the last topic on today's Travel Commons podcast, fun with rental cars. You know, there's a certain casualness that comes with traveling on an expense account. It's not that you're traveling on a blank check, but there are some things you'll do that you might not if you had to pull the money from your own pocket. You know, a nice dinner, an upgraded hotel room, taking a cab instead of waiting for the free hotel shuttle. Bits of reward for some of the hardships of travel. Sometimes, though, that casualness goes a bit farther into what some might call carelessness. And while this can manifest itself in a number of ways, there is something about rental cars that just seems to really bring this out. Now, I know the gang at Hertz and Avis are just going to cringe if they end up hearing this segment, but the phrase, "it's just a rental," is a common refrain, usually sung right before you do something that you wouldn't do to your own car. From something sort of as innocuous as tossing an empty Starbucks cup into the back seat to something as truly juvenile as trying to peg the speedometer. There's something about a collision damage waiver that brings out the heavy foot. One of the highlights of my weekly trips to Phoenix last year was the ramp onto the northbound Black Canyon Freeway. You know, really nicely banked and not too crowded. I never got it over 100 miles an hour on there, but I got really close in a brand new red Ford Mustang convertible. You know, I was just trying to help him break it in. On a recent project, I had two guys who were complete gearheads. You know, lots of dinner conversation about boring out cylinders and rebuilding engines. Well, I'll tell you, these two guys decided that they were going to smoke the tires on every rental car they drove. Sometimes this was easier said than done. With some cars, it was pretty easy. You just sort of stomp on the accelerator coming off a red light, and wheels would spin. You get a good bit of blue smoke and leave a nice patch on the asphalt. And kind of that satisfying squeal would actually turn some heads from the folks around you at the stoplight. But that was half the fun. Other cars, though. They seem to have a bit of a governor that kept the RPM down, so it would limit the revs, and you just couldn't wind up the engine enough before the wheels kicked in, so you couldn't get that good spin going, and the Mazdas were the worst, so they were the worst at it, which could have meant they had the best governors. Anyhow, these guys, the gearheads, really hated that. And so they kept trying to get around these governors and think about different ways they could sort of cheat it and still sort of get around and get that smoke, get that tire squeal. But they just couldn't they couldn't make it work. So they finally just sort of broke down and decided they were just going to brute force it. So they'd get it alight, they'd put the car in neutral, rev it up high, just get it, I wouldn't say red line, but every once in a while they'd get it into the yellow, and then slam the transmission into drive when the light turned green. Sure enough, there was smoke. It's interesting times. I'm not even going to tell you guys the story about playing bumper cars on I-95 going through Stanford at 70 miles an hour. Suffice it to say, there were police involved. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 24, and I think I've managed to work my way through this entire bottle of Ankerstein beer. I will tell you, though, that I've decided that drinking beer and podcasting, at least recording a podcast, they just don't go together. There are a number of times that I've had to stop the Little Eye River recording for a little bit of a belch, and there'll be a little bit of editing done on some of those times that I wasn't quite quick enough on the pause button. Anyhow, because of that, I think you'll enjoy this podcast a little bit more than you would have in its raw state. I hope you decide to stay subscribed. If you get a chance, drop by the website and do the listener survey. I'd really appreciate it. And remember, travel stories, travel experiences, the voice of the traveler are really at the core of Travel Commons. And so send them along to comments@travelcommons.com or post them on the website at travelcommons.com. I also appreciate the postings on podcastalley.com, and thanks everybody for the feedback. I really appreciate it. I also appreciate the topic suggestions. I covered Ian's this week. And I've got a few more in the queue, and I'll be getting to those over the next couple of podcasts. So I really appreciate it. I appreciate you guys taking the time and taking the listens and the notes I get from folks just saying that you're listening to this and you really enjoy it. So because of that, I'll actually record another one of these. So until then, take care, and I hope you have a good weekend. Bye now.